You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I don't know about you folks, but I fear for our democracy. The Russians are here. The Chinese are here. The president is actively undermining the legitimacy of our election system. He's already shown a willingness to stoke the white boys out there who are already armed to the teeth. He's already questioning the outcome of the election before it's occurred. Some use the color and the circles ballots. I'm guessing we still have hanging chads. We have mail-in ballots, absentee ballots. We have the old-style machines, the newer touchscreen system. Democrats think it would cost billions to fix it. Republicans will have none of that. One party benefits when voting is suppressed. The other wants voting to be as easy as possible. I guess it's fair to wonder whether whatever system you have is capable of being compromised, so why vote? And on top of it all, we have a tiny microbe having a ball at our expense while the president, who appears to be incapable of remorse, just refuses to lead for whatever godforsaken reason. That is sure to keep folks home on election day. A 17-year-old kid shot people randomly, somehow thinking it was the right thing to do, and the president won't even condemn his behavior. He is, though, pretty amped about sending what they call federal agents into cities. He's actively sowing the seeds of hate and division. Is this what the apocalypse looks like? Is this the United States of America? And are you asking me to be proud of this? In democracy, an election is a good way to turn a country onto the right track, but there's ample evidence that the integrity of the election is in jeopardy. Lamont McClure, save me here.
Alan, in Northampton County, which is the only little piece of the world I can help to control, your election this fall is going to be safe, legal, and accurate. Our systems, the processes we have in place, the Northampton County voter needs to understand, whether they want to vote by mail or in person, that we're going to have processes in place that mean your ballot will be secure, it will be properly cast, and in the end, properly counted. We don't want people to panic. We want people to stay calm. This is their democracy. And if they get out and vote however they choose to, be it in the mail or in person, it will count. And they can be assured of that. It is right now my highest priority. I swore an oath to protect and defend, and I will make sure that there are no shenanigans in Northampton County. We're going to call it straight down the middle. Doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican or independent. Your vote's going to get cast and properly counted.
Lamont McClure is the Northampton County executive, of course. He's an attorney by training, served a couple terms on county council, and has spent an enormous amount of energy and resources trying to get the best system he can get in the county. The first run encountered a number of troubles that were well documented, and the mother was pretty frustrated those problems were corrected, and the primary election came off without a hitch in the primary election. Lamont, let's start with, how does the system work that you've put in place, and why do you think it's so tight and perfect as a system?
Well, I don't think it's perfect because humans are involved, right? Okay. And whenever human activity is involved, there is no perfection. With that being said, we had a really flawless primary election. And that came off of the previous election, which wasn't flawless. We had some difficulty there. But what we found with the new Excel system, which people will be voting on in person, there's a paper backup. So there is a paper trail. So you know when you cast your vote, you see your vote on the paper. And you know that that paper ballot can be counted. But let me just say this. The General Assembly really threw us a curveball when, through Act 77, they made mail-in ballots without an excuse. So now in Pennsylvania, we essentially are administering two separate election systems, one a vote-by-mail system and another a in-person system. So let me sort of answer your question by talking about the in-person system. We have approximately 154 precincts. We will be mobilizing 315 ESNS Express XL machines, which have been recalibrated and worked fantastically well in the primary election. So if you're one of those folks who wants to vote in person, you're going to be rest assured that those machines have been recalibrated. Any errors we had last November were fixed for the primary, which went very, very well. And what you need to know is they have a paper ballot backup, and that paper ballot backup will secure your vote if you're an in-person voter.
So you have a redundancy. You know that if something goes wrong in the mechanics, you'll have the good old-fashioned people looking at ballots, filling out forms, and getting those voters in. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And, you know, Alan, we had a stress test last November. We didn't want one, right? But we had the nuclear stress test of voting. And what we found out with that backup paper ballot, we have a system that no matter what, we can have a fair, legal, and accurate election in Northampton County. And I want Northampton County voters to be confident, whether you vote by mail or vote in person, that your vote will count. So please get out and vote, irrespective of who you intend to vote for. Cast your vote and know that our processes in Northampton County are secure.
Amant, if somebody were to ask you, what's the best way for me to be sure that my vote is going to count? Would you suggest they do a mail-in, or would you suggest they show up at the polls?
Oh, actually, I don't have a dog in that fight, if you will. I think the people who want to vote by mail should vote by mail. And I think the people who want to show up, we have 154 precincts, 315 machines. Everybody who wants to vote in person can vote in person, and everybody who wants to vote by mail can vote by mail. All they have to do is go to votespa.com, and let me give you the whole address. It's www.votespa.com, and you can get your no-excuse mail-in ballot there. The thing that I would suggest to folks who are going to mail their votes in, as soon as you get your ballot, if you know who you're voting for, fill it out and return it. Follow the instructions. Read the instructions closely, fill it out, and return it. You're not even going to have to put a stamp on it because it's already going to have postage on it for you. So immediately return it if you're going to vote by mail. And your mail-in ballot will be secured here in the Northampton County Courthouse, and no one will tamper with it. So I don't have a preferred method. I myself will be voting in person, but I would encourage anyone who doesn't feel safe, because let's talk about COVID a little bit.
Yeah.
All of our poll workers are going to have masks on. We are going to have hand sanitizer at each of our polling locations, and the machines will be sanitized after every use. Now, this may slow things down a little bit, but we're going to protect people from coronavirus. Now, you're not required to wear a mask to come and vote, but here's what I would say to you. Please wear a mask when you come and vote, and please maintain social distancing. And here's why I'm imploring you to do this, even if you feel it's some infringement on your freedom, which I don't happen to agree with. Please protect the poll workers who are doing this to move our democracy forward. Protect the poll workers by wearing a mask. Please do that.
That's a very good point. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight is Lamont McClure. This is election year. It's a big time, the mother of all elections this time, as far as I'm concerned. If you have never voted in your life, vote this time. This is the most crucial election I think that will occur in our lifetime. Lamont, there have been efforts by mostly Democrats, I think, at the national level to improve the voting systems. Wasn't there a law that required all the counties in Pennsylvania to upgrade their systems?
Actually, Alan, it wasn't a law. What happened was Jill Stein, unfortunately, sued the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania after the 2016 presidential election. And Governor Wolf settled that lawsuit. And during the settlement, the Commonwealth agreed that we would no longer use the old DRE voting machines. These direct record devices had the potential to be hacked. Now, we have devices. Now, you can't hack them. I mean, is it possible? Yes. If you went to a hacker's conference for a month, they might be able to break into one machine. But these machines are so secure, they're virtually unhackable. But the old machines, the old DRE machines that these have replaced, were eminently hackable. And the Commonwealth agreed with Stein to settle that lawsuit. So that's what required us to spend almost $3 million to get new machines in North, actually all over the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Every county was affected by this. Then the General Assembly enacted Act 77, which took the old-fashioned absentee ballot, which you had to have an excuse to get, to a no-excuse mail-in vote. So we essentially had to retool our equipment because of the lawsuit settlement, and then we had to create an entire apparatus for the mail-in election. So essentially, we're running a hybrid form of election in Northampton County and throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. But what I want your listeners to know, Alan, is there's going to be a fair, legal, and accurate election in Northampton County. And more to the point, that's not mere sloganing. Our processes are so highly secure that your mail-in ballot and your vote cast on election day are going to be counted. They're going to be counted.
I made a few phone calls to different Republicans in the hope of getting the alternative point of view. My understanding, though, Lamont, is that you don't see this as a partisan issue. You're a Democrat, obviously, and so is your counterpart over in Lehigh County. But you don't see this as a partisan issue. You believe that everybody wants to vote, and this is not something where if I had a Northampton County Republican committee chairman here, he would be arguing with you on it. Am I understanding that right?
Well, first of all, I am a Democrat, and I am a proud supporter of the Biden-Harris ticket. So that's who I'm voting for, that you need to know that.
Yep.
But as I have said over and over again, the safe and secure, fair and legal, accurate casting and counting of votes in Northampton County is a nonpartisan issue. I swore an oath to make sure that there are safe, secure, legal, fair, accurate elections in Northampton County, and I will make sure of that. None of my partisan instincts will play any role in whether you can vote on a machine on election day or whether your mail-in ballot will be secure. We're going to call it right down the middle. We're going to follow the letter of the law, and we're going to make sure the day after, a day or two later, everybody can be confident in the results in Northampton County. There will be no games played in Northampton County with respect to the election by either side. I promise you that.
The president has been raising questions and people's anxiety about the credibility of the election, and in part saying that the mail-in ballots are in particular going to be problematic and that they are conducive to fraud. I mean, how do you respond to that claim?
Well, I don't talk about the president much. I don't really feel like there's a whole lot of value in responding to the things that the president says. I will just simply point out that the president said that the election was rigged up until the moment he won it in 2016, then it wasn't rigged anymore.
Right.
So, you know, we really can't, just like with the coronavirus, COVID-19, you really can't listen to anything the president's saying. And I think with voting, it's the same way. You really can't listen to anything the president's saying because it's not really grounded in facts and in reality. And so I would ignore the president when it comes to the coronavirus and COVID-19 and when it comes to voting and the security of voting, because mail-in ballots are highly secure. There's no evidence of widespread fraud with respect to mail-in voting. We've got like 5 states in the United States of America that have mail-in voting. That's all they have. And some of those states are dominated by Republicans like Utah, and some are more Democratic-leaning. But the fact of the matter is, there's no fraud in any of those states with mail-in balloting. And the president or the attorney general, they make up stories, but there are no facts. There's nothing behind their allegations. Mail-in balloting is highly secure. We've been doing it for the entire time we've been voting in this republic, specifically since at least the Civil War, right? It's been safe and secure from the Civil War to today. And we need to not pay attention to any of the rhetoric the president uses. We just need to remember the president said the 2016 election was rigged until he won it, and then it wasn't rigged anymore. So we need to keep that in mind, and folks just need to tune him out.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Alan Jennings, your host by day, Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley, actually by night, by weekend. My whole life is spent there. My friend Lamont McClure is on the line with us tonight. We're talking about the integrity of the American voting system. And Lamont, so you've convinced me that Northampton County is safe. What about the rest? I mean, aren't there really dilapidated old, systems that are capable of being compromised around the country? Or, I mean, the Democrats, as I mentioned in the start of the show, said that they needed billions of dollars to make the system work, and they didn't get that. So is there a reason we should be worried about other voting systems around the country? Do you know?
Look, the provision of a general election is an inherently human activity. And whenever you have humans involved in any activity, it's going to be flawed. But the fact of the matter is, throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have all new systems. We are ready to go. We know that. In Northampton County, we've had a stress test. In terms of the entire nation, we have been revamping the way we vote since the 2000 presidential election, ever since Bush v. Gore.
Yeah, that was a good one, huh?
The Helping America Votes Act was passed not too long after that election. The federal government has been pouring tens of millions of dollars into the national election infrastructure since then. So are we perfect? No. Do we need more money? Yes. Are we better off than we were in 2000? Absolutely. Are we more secure today than we were in even 2016? Certainly.
So if you get a lot of mail-in ballots, are you going to be able to count them the night of the election, or do you think you're going to have to give it a couple of days? I'm hearing that there's an expectation that it'll be days or weeks before the mail-in ballots can all get counted and we'll actually know who the President of the United States is going to be.
Well, it definitely won't be weeks in Northampton County, and we're supposed to be a bellwether county. I think by the time the sun comes up on Wednesday morning, we'll have almost all of our ballots counted. Okay. We have 3 high-speed scanners. We have 3 industrial letter openers. We're going to be ready to go. Even if we can only start counting at 7 a.m., we will have about half of our mail-in votes counted by the time the polls close on Election Day. So that'll be a significant number of mail-in votes that we will be reporting already, along with our machine numbers as they start to come in around 9, 10, and 11 o'clock. So you're going to have, I believe, a majority of the votes in Northampton County counted by 11 o'clock. Now, if the General Assembly doesn't give us 2 or 3 days in advance, they call pre-canvassing, will we have all our votes counted on Election Day? I doubt it. We'll probably need to go into the next day, but not much more than the next day. And we're really going to know by 11 o'clock on election night what Northampton County is looking like. Although, please keep in mind, there still will be other votes to count, other mail-in votes to count, because if the General Assembly doesn't let us count 3 days, what they call pre-canvass, before Election Day, we won't be able to get all of our mail-in ballots counted on Election Day, but we'll get at least half of them counted with our 3 high-speed scanners. So I think by sunrise the next morning, we're going to know what happened in Northampton County for sure.
So just to throw a little bit of partisanship in here, I'm just wondering, you're the county executive in a Trump voter county, you know, and I'm wondering if you think Northampton County is going to go Trump again like it did 4 years ago.
Look, I don't. As I said before, I'm a supporter of Vice President Biden, a strong supporter. He reflects the values that I've reflected in my campaigns and as I've been governing. I don't know if you noticed, but very early on in the campaign, I was the only elected Democratic official in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to endorse Kamala Harris. I was very proud to do that. And then after she dropped, I endorsed Vice President Biden. I think the people of Northampton County are ready for a change, and I think that means Biden-Harris.
Lamont, we appreciate your good work on behalf of the democracy, and boy, I hope everybody else is working at it like you have been. So way to go. Hang in there, and we'll have you back on the show another time.
Alan, thank you. First of all, it's always a pleasure to be with you, my friend. Thanks. And thank you for all the good work you do in the world.
Thanks, Lamont. I appreciate that very much. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We just had Lamont McClure. Just a minute, we're going to have Mark Pinsley, the Lehigh County Controller. Stay with us.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back. I'm Alan Jennings. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. We just talked to Lamont McClure, the county executive in Northampton County, who assured us that the system is all right and going to work the way it's supposed to. Now I've got on the show Mark Pinsley. Mark is a new name in electoral circles in Lehigh Valley. Ran against Pat Brown a few years ago, but he's just last year ran and for and was elected to Lehigh County Controller's position. Mark is a small businessman, but also the Lehigh County Controller, and has already distinguished himself as an independent watchdog. He's been active on issues like criminal justice reform, which is what makes me a fan. Mark has been one of those tireless kind of guys that just, I think, is having a lot of fun being involved in trying to make our world a better place. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I am having fun.
Well, if you don't screw it up, I'll have you back on again, you know? So, so let's talk about Lehigh County. You know, they had this this requirement that all the systems get made more modern and better. Lehigh County didn't seem to have as much commotion as Northampton County did, but what did Lehigh County do to make the system work better?
Well, they had just a completely different system, to be honest. So Northampton County really had their issue two votes ago, I should say, where their machines were like hypersensitive to being touched, so people were casting votes that they didn't want to. In our case, we actually went back to physical paper. So somebody fills in, it's like going back to school for your SATs or whatever, and you're filling it in with a number 2 pencil,
and then it gets scanned.
What's that?
You mean they don't do that anymore?
They might. I don't know. My kids don't tell me these things. But that was the reason that we were more successful in the prior election, which was simply that it was just back to basics. Since then, I think that we ended up having a problem in the last election where they were successful, and that was just in counting. So we had a lot more absentee ballots come in or mail, vote by mail come in last time. And they actually did a very good job of processing, and it took us about a little over a week to get ours processed and counted.
So do you think you have any kind of issues relative to either the system not working right or the system being undermined in some way? How confident are you that the system is going to work mechanically?
Mechanically, I feel very confident. In fact, we bought new letter openers. So one of the things that we found after exploring why it took us long to, to tally all of the votes versus why others got it done more quickly, it was simply letter openers, so automated letter openers. So you have to remember there's two envelopes. There's the outer envelope and then the inside privacy envelope. So for every letter you're sending, you actually have two envelopes to open. And so the places that got done the quickest were ones that had fast letter openers, which we have purchased. So I feel confident in that. And the process here is well suited for, counting all the ballots. The biggest thing I'm concerned about is the post office not delivering.
Oh, man. Yeah, boy, that's another one. Okay. So the security of the system, then, you're comfortable that the system is going to work mechanically. What about the ability to undermine it by some hacking or something like that? What is the potential for that to occur?
I think any system can be hacked. I'm reticent to say that it's completely secure just because, somebody would want to try and prove me wrong. But frankly, it's a very secure system. The processes that we have in place, are secure as well. So it's not, people have always wondered things like, okay, well, let's say that I get a ballot and I copy that ballot a million times and then submit that. Well, you can't do that. There's a serial number on the ballot. It spits it out if there's all of a sudden 20 of the same serial number coming back. you know, things like that. Or what if somebody goes in and they request a mail-in ballot and then they go and they vote in person? Well, we actually know that they requested a mail-in ballot, for example. And so we do allow them to vote in case they fail to vote using the mail-in ballot, but it becomes a provisional ballot. And then we see whether or not we've received the mail-in ballot first. And if we do, I believe the process is we don't count your in-person, but that I have to check. So one of them doesn't get counted.
So if the mechanics fail, do you have any kind of redundancy in place to make sure that people could still vote?
So when you say mechanics, like what I think of now is like the readers that we have that come in, you know, that are here physically.
Right.
And we do have redundancy in the readers themselves.
Okay.
I think we have 3 readers now.
Okay. So, but you don't have some mechanism for switching to paper ballots exclusively because something goes wrong at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on election day?
Well, most of ours are paper ballots.
Oh, that's...
So, yeah, so like if you go out, if you... Yeah, yeah. If you go to the polling station, you will get a paper ballot. Then that ballot gets scanned into a machine, and then that machine, you know, submits the information to us. If by chance, you know, it can't submit the information, then those paper ballots can be locked up and then counted at another time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea whether the county is adequately staffed to be able to turn around those mail-in ballots, you know, in a quick way?
I believe that we have the people here in staff, meaning at the county itself. My bigger concern at the moment is people staffing the polling locations. So you may have a polling location that you've gone to for the last 10 years, you know, and that polling location is run by somebody who maybe is in their 60s or 70s and is concerned about
being at the polling. Hey, I'm in my 60s. What are you saying here?
I'm saying don't go to the polling station. No, a lot of people are worried about being, you know, being at the polls all day long.
Yeah.
They're trying to get some younger people to volunteer if the older person is no longer willing to do it.
Okay. So we're not going to have a situation where on NBC News, Lester Holt says the election's being held up by a polling place in Lehigh County, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah, that should not happen.
Okay, all
that
right.
That should not happen. Yeah.
So the president is actively out there saying that this system, that this election is already suspect. You know, I'm not sure I'm going to embrace the results. What do you say to the president when he makes those kind of claims? Do you have a way of refuting that? And I mean, because you know, there are a lot of people somehow that are still buying what he's selling.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is like. It's just an easy out for anyone. You can never prove anything. And right now, like what he's really done, I think effectively, first off, he's slowed down the mail. Like we know for a fact that the mail has slowed down. So that's a problem. And then, so a lot of people believe that there's going to be a red mirage. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, but the red mirage is basically on election night, Republicans end up showing up at the polls, whereas Democrats put in mail-in ballots. And so the immediate election looks like Trump won.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly we start counting the mail-in ballots, and that's where his people believe that, well, see, he had won, but it's not true. Everything that's being mailed in is fake. I don't know what you do to change that thinking.
Yeah. Well, and then you get into all kinds of crazy things like the president not accepting the results, refusing to leave the White House, calling in the National Guard. I mean, we could have an ugly situation, and you know, you hate to sound like a like we're embracing conspiracy theories like the radical right is, but you know, I can envision a number of different scenarios where we've got a lot of confusion and disruption going on. Does that sound right to you, or is that crazy?
Yeah, no, that sounds. Yeah, there was an organization, I think it was out of Boston, that they did sort of like war games, you know, playing what if Trump won, what if Biden won, all these kind of things. In most cases, people were out in the streets. Like they projected that people would be out in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So you imagine that. Let's say Trump wins because of the Electoral College, but he loses by 5 million votes. People are out in the streets saying that something's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
That things just didn't turn out right. And then vice versa. Let's assume that Trump wins at this moment. You know, after saying that there's all these problems with the election, with the post office, all this kind of stuff. Well, everybody's going to be out saying he stole the election. I think that we're not going to get around that unless it's a landslide. for one or the other. I think that we're going to be in for a world of hurt. That's what I think.
Remember the incident where Trump had the guard bring in tear gas and cleared all those people away from Lafayette Park so he could stride over to the church that he'd never attended and do that whole thing with the Bible. You remember that?
And yes,
the general that accompanied him realized that he'd been used and disowned the whole thing. It's sort of crazy that we have generals are the ones that are kind of leading the moral charge in opposition to some of this stuff. But, I mean, what happens if the president calls in the guard and says, I'm not leaving? I mean, can you imagine? I mean, it's going to feel like Eastern Europe during the breakdown of the Soviet Union or something. I mean,
yeah, you know, it's funny because I saw an article by one of these generals because they had asked him, like, if Trump refuses to leave, you know, will you remove him? And he said, no. He's like, you know, we're not going to get involved in the politics of it. That'll have to go to the courts.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, to have a general who's been taught for his entire career to obey his superior to actually disobey the president of the United States, the commander in chief.
Yeah, because at that level, of course, they really are supposed to be focused on the Constitution. That's who they're pledged to. They're not pledged to the president.
Yeah.
But I mean, I agree with you. Like, you know, the likelihood is if the president said, do this, they're going to do that. And they're going to be in a confused state, or they may be in a confused state if they're unsure as to who won. You know, because January 20th, one way or the other, the presidency changes.
Right.
Like, so if we're up in the air, it doesn't matter. The current presidency ends and a new presidency begins.
Right. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, run the Community Action Committee in the Lehigh Valley, but thankfully WDIY gives me the opportunity to talk to interesting people about interesting things going on in our world. I get to do this once a month, and I'm happy to do it tonight. I had Lamont McClure earlier. I've got Mark Pinsley right now. Mark is the Lehigh County Controller, an activist by nature and by instinct, and he's got a very interesting perspective on the Electoral College. Now, the Electoral College is one of those murky kind of, you know, I'm not quite sure how it works type thing, where you've got each state's got a number of electors, and they are based on the numbers of people in their state by proportion to the rest of the country, and those people are actually the ones that call the shots. Nobody knows who they are. So, Mark, help us with this. Before we get into what worries you about the Electoral College, just if you could fill in where I maybe didn't give a good enough explanation, how does the Electoral College really work for the average American who just doesn't get it?
Yeah, so the Electoral College is basically a person that represents you in your state. And when I say you, I mean the population of the state. So most states, what they do is whatever the popular vote within that state is, you know, so in our case, if Pennsylvania has voted for the Democrat as a majority, then all of our Electoral College votes go to the Democrat. Or if they all vote for a Republican, then all of the Electoral College votes are then for the Republican. But it's just somebody who represents you inside Pennsylvania. And they are selected typically, well, in Pennsylvania, they're selected by Biden in this case. So they'd be selected by the Democrat nominee and then also by Trump, the Republican nominee. And really, I mean, obviously, they don't actually select it. It usually ends up being the party that selects, you know, loyalists. Mm-hmm. And there's 18 here in Pennsylvania. So it matches. There's actually 20 in Pennsylvania. But on the House side, there's 18. That matches the number of
congresspeople.
Thank you, congresspeople that you have. Correct.
So what is it about the Electoral College system that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, back in 2016, I actually tried to change the Electoral College vote, you know, away from Trump back in the day. So we were not trying to get Hillary elected. We were just trying to get a different Republican elected because we were worried about Trump. And we were able to swing 7 votes. So those are 7 votes, both on the Hillary side and the Trump side in total, that didn't vote for the person that they were supposed to vote for. And it's called a faithless elector. So they're supposed to vote for, let's say, Trump, or they're supposed to vote for Biden, but they choose to vote for either the opposite party or someone else. Hmm. Now, the issue is the way that the Electoral College is made up is 435 representatives. 100 based on our 100 senators, and 3 for the District of Columbia, which gives us 538. In order to win, you need 270 votes.
Wait a minute. 535 is 430 House members and 100 senators.
And 3 for the District of Columbia.
Right. Okay. I just want to make sure. That's okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you need 270 to win. That's the number we need to win the presidency. And a lot of people believe that this year in particular, that it's going to be very close on the Electoral College side. Not that it's going to be close on the general election side. A lot of people think it'll be a landslide. I have no idea. But if it's close, let's assume that you get 271 Electoral College votes for Biden. Let's just assume for a moment. If that happens, and if the Republicans, do what we did, which was start to lobby the electors, all they need to do is change 2 electors and Biden would no longer be the president. It would go to Trump. And unlike the way we did it, I'm very worried about the people that follow QAnon and any of these right-wing media outlets, that tell people to go out and shoot someone or to beat them or whatever. What if you start, really going after the Electoral College and threatening them or their families if they don't vote the way you want? If you only need to swing, 2 or 3 votes, my guess is you could find that 2 or 3 votes by threatening 15 different people that are supposed to vote for the opposite side, in this case Biden, and getting them to either vote for Trump directly or getting them to change their vote. And as long as they change their vote and Biden doesn't get the 270 to win, then it goes to Congress. And in Congress, there's only 1 vote per state. So it's by delegation. And currently that delegation is primarily Republican. So it's 22 Democrats to 26 Republicans, and then 2 states that don't get to vote because their Congress people are equal Democrats and Republicans, Pennsylvania being one of them.
Right.
We have 9 Democrats and 9 Republicans, so we don't vote. And Michigan is the same. I forget what their breakdown is, but it's the same as ours, half and half.
Okay, so let's continue with this then. There is nothing that requires these electors to vote the way the popular vote went?
Well, back in the day, there was absolutely nothing that required them, right? Because if you remember, the real purpose of the electors was that, the founding fathers really just didn't trust the average person.
Right.
There was not the internet at the time. There wasn't this massive amount of communication that happened. And probably they were elitists anyway, is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
But now, we have all of this information available to us. You could sort of ask, do we need them anymore? But like going back to your question, which is, do they have to vote? It wasn't meant that they would have to vote for the popular vote. Like, that came later. The electors were just meant to vote for who they thought, based on their constituency, would be the proper president. Then over time, states came up with their own rules. Now, Pennsylvania, for example, really doesn't have a rule that says you must vote the way the popular vote says. There's no law that says that. So normally what ends up happening is the party, selects the electors from their most loyal people, right? So they know that these people are true Democrats or true Republicans, and they're not going to vote for the opposite party. That's why they get selected. Now, in some states, there's actually fines or imprisonment that can happen if you vote for the wrong, or if you vote for the opposite party, or vote for not the one that you said that you would vote for, but not in Pennsylvania. And each state is different.
So where did this theory come from? Is this you dreaming this up in your mind? Is this QAnon's worst nightmare? Is this, because this is fascinating to me, and I don't understand why this isn't being discussed.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not being discussed either. So what I would say is like, yes, it is something that I came up with in my own mind. It's not meant to be a conspiracy theory. But it came up after I read about that group that I believe was in Boston that were doing these war games, just trying to see, well, what would happen if this person won? What would happen if this person won? But they weren't really looking at the underlying, how to change who won. And because I had been through it in 2016, we had actually, I spoke with General Colin Powell, asking him if he would raise his hand to the electors and say that they could vote for him. You know, somebody else in my group talked to John Kasich, asking him if he was willing to do the same thing. And remember, at that time, like, we didn't know we were going to do this. None of this, there was no lead time to think about it. You know, Trump won. We didn't think he was going to win. We thought Hillary was going to win. So starting the day after Trump won, we started educating ourselves on the Constitution and, like, what did it mean to have the election and what were the different components of the election. And that was how we became familiar with this. And then we found that we could find out who the electors were. And so we tracked them down and we started calling them and emailing them, writing them, everything we could to try and change the outcome of the election. And we did change seven electors' votes.
And were they all in Pennsylvania?
Or something like that.
No.
I don't think anyone changed in Pennsylvania. There were some out of Texas, out of Washington State. I forget where they all were. They were in different areas of the country.
So why is this not being talked about? Why is this not being written? I mean, this is just an incredible thing. You've got an op-ed that you're hoping that will run nationally, which would be really cool. What if somebody comes out and says, this Pinsley guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He's wrong. Are you sure that you've got this system understood adequately to be able to make this? I mean, this is a fascinating story that you've got here.
Yeah, no, I'm positive. You know, if you look up, like, Unite for America on YouTube, you'll see, like, a video that we had put out, you know, some time ago. That was with, like, Martin Sheen, Deborah Messing, Moby. They had actually created a video, you know, trying to help us change the Electoral College vote. Because everybody understood, most people understand that it's not them voting, that it is the Electoral College vote. But they don't realize that people have actually tried lobbying the Electoral College to change their vote. Because nobody thinks about that, right? Like, you're just like, okay, well, now the Electoral College term, it's sort of, you know, like a monkey could do it. Like, what do you actually need the Electoral College for if their vote is already fait accompli?
Right.
But it's not a fait accompli. That's the whole point. That's why we still have it.
So you can change the way we elect, you can get rid of the Electoral College and still have a voting system that's a state-by-state voting system.
You could, absolutely.
Right. And would you support that, or would you go to a straight popular vote?
You know, after lots of thought, I would go to a straight popular vote. This way, everybody knows that their vote is counted literally. I think we're one of the only countries that doesn't have a popular vote. But I've struggled with that, to be honest, because, you know, one of the reasons for the Electoral College was to say that, you know, a state like Delaware would have the ability to have a say, even though they're a small state.
Right.
And so, like, you know, in a fairness factor, I'm like, okay, well, maybe there is some fairness to the Electoral College, but I just don't see it any longer. I think the more I look at it, and when you look at people and the people that live here, it probably outweighs, we are still the United States, right? We are a union.
Right.
And so rather than looking at each state individually, I think having a popular vote makes more sense.
So who would be the beneficiary of the change that you would promote? Are you supporting essentially your democratic agenda, or are you saying the integrity of the system is more important than one party or another? How would you come down on this?
Yeah, no, I think the integrity is more important than one party or the other. I mean, like, realistically, let's say that we had changed, you know, from Trump to somebody else. I think that, obviously I would have been happy with that, but I don't think that is necessarily good for the system. The system breaks down that way.
Right.
Right. And the same thing here, you know, once again, I guess my concern here on this side is that, once again, QAnon, InfoWars, those people, you know, they won't be kind.
Right.
Like, you know, we just saw this kid who was 17,
yep,
shoot and kill two people.
What was a 17-year-old doing with a weapon in the first place?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, imagine that InfoWars was like, okay, go to your local elector and make sure they change their vote away from Biden.
Right.
Wow. I mean, to me, that's a scary prospect.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mark Pinsley, very fascinating issue. I appreciate your appearing on the show. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll have you back another time.
Very good. Thanks, Alan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on Lehigh Valley Public Radio, WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly. Stick with us.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
If you made a contribution to WDIY's 2020 Spring Membership Drive, your t-shirt has arrived. All contributors to the drive are entitled to a limited edition 25th anniversary WDIY t-shirt. Join us on our t-shirt pickup day in front of our neighbors at Seven Sirens Brewing Company in Southside Bethlehem this Saturday, September 12th from 12 to 6 p.m. Pull up curbside or pull into the lot to walk up. More information is at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Alan Jennings. I'm your host. This is WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. And we're talking about this year's election season. It's Labor Day. Americans are going to start paying more attention to the election. And we talked to Lamont McClure a little bit earlier. Lamont spoke about the credibility and the integrity of the electoral system, as did Mark Pinsley. Talked about the Electoral College, a huge variable in this election is going to be people of color. And just because Latinos fairly significantly outnumber African Americans, in particular Latino vote, this has been a rough 4 years for people whose families immigrated here. You saw the children get taken out of the hands of their parents. You've seen just incredible policy recommendations and division sown to separate us from people coming into the country. I'm happy to have Delia Marrero, who is with the Lehigh Valley's Hispanic Center, the Hispanic Center of the Lehigh Valley. Also, in full disclosure, she also worked for my agency until recently when she moved over to the Hispanic Center of the Lehigh Valley. Delia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan, for having me.
Wow, I know your dad was like, your dad is like the king of the Southside Puerto Rican community, and that you were raised to be political. And I'm just wondering what you think the Latino vote is going to, is what kind of impact you think you might expect the Latino population to have in the Lehigh Valley, especially for now, and we can talk about national as well.
Well, my grandfather was the one who was the activists in the community. I think the Latino vote in our community particularly, I'm a little concerned about, particularly when I hear people saying they're not going to vote because they can't either way. So I'm a little concerned about the education around their role in voting and why it's important to participate in the process. But I just want to make sure, you know, one of my roles is making sure that the community has the information for both sides, understanding the process, why it's important to participate, their civic duties, and just understanding that they really do have an impact from down to the local level up to the federal level, that we need to participate more and be heard in our community.
I know that in Puerto Rico, the Puerto Ricans vote very religiously. I mean, it's like almost a second national pastime after baseball. What is it about people coming here then and not participating? Do you have any idea what makes that happen?
Well, I think part of the challenges in Puerto Rico, they actually close businesses and offices for voting. They also, you know, it's celebratory. I have some staff members here who recall their families making picnics and having picnics with their family and not allowing family members in if they didn't show proof that they voted that day. So it's a different type of participation. I believe they understand. But I think it gets a little more complicated when they move here, understanding when to vote, what you're voting for, all the different types of, you know, is this, what kind of election is it? Is it for the mayor? Is it for the president? Is it for the governor? So I think there's a layer of complexity when they move over here.
Do you think, and you know, you and I as staff for nonprofit organizations cannot encourage people to vote one way or another. We can't encourage people to vote Democrat or Republican or vote for this candidate or that candidate or even register one party or another. But can you say what you think the immigration, the policy battle over the last 4 years on immigration is going to do in terms of the electoral, you know, landscape for Hispanics. So are they? I mean, because there are some who were okay with the behavior because they're sort of here. They don't want to be embarrassed by, you know, irresponsible behavior or whatever. Do you have a sense of which way Latinos are going to go based on the last 4 years of their experience?
I really don't. So with the Latino vote, the interesting thing is you have Latinos on both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. Some have very conservative views, some have very liberal views, and they just kind of, you know, they just kind of go either which way depending on what they're viewing to be the priority. So I don't have a sense of what that's going to be like or play out. I have, you know, come across various people, I mean, from saying I'm going to vote one way or another to I'm not going to vote at all, which is always very interesting to me.
I think a lot of people think of the Hispanic community as a monolith, you know, that all Hispanics think alike. But the reality is the Mexicans are very different from Cubans, who are very different from Puerto Ricans, and their experiences are very different. The people who have been really mistreated in the immigration thing, I'm not Puerto Ricans, because Puerto Ricans are Americans. A lot of people don't seem to understand that. But anybody who's been born in Puerto Rico is every bit as much an American as I am. So the issue over immigration really is a Mesoamerican issue, really, Mexico, Central America. And we don't have a large Mexican population in Lehigh Valley. Do you think Hispanic voters look at that, though, and are offended by just the general treatment of Latinos overall? Or do you think, that's the Mexicans, it's not my problem?
So I think there's a combination of both when it comes down to it. So within our Hispanic communities, Latino communities, you have a lot of this, exactly what you said. You know, Puerto Ricans are different from Mexicans, and Mexicans are different from Cubans. You have a South American, you know, experience. You have a Caribbean experience as a Hispanic person. So I think, you know, depending on where we're at as people also depends on our viewpoint. So not everybody understands the complexities around all of those other factors. So understanding that as a Puerto Rican, I'm still Hispanic, and what happens to the Mexican community, the Peruvian community, still is something that I should be concerned with as a Latina. And I think sometimes that gets lost because people don't always have time to understand all of that.
Yeah. The battles over race over this past year and the George Floyd lynching and the Ahmaud Arbery lynching and every one of them, they've really focused on black people specifically and almost exclusively. How do you look at yourself as a Latino in the context of what's going on with Black Lives Matter?
So I think it's challenging for me as a Latino, I understand Black Lives Matter, I understand the importance of it, but finding out where my role is as an ally, as a Puerto Rican, understanding my history, and how the African slave trade was also embedded in the Caribbean, indigenous people, you know, the European conquest. So I think it's challenging for me, like, where do I fall in that role as an ally? Mm-hmm. Understanding that I have this heritage and history that aligns me with a community, but I'm not claiming that I am black in that sense because I am a very light-skinned Latina, but I am also the mother of two black and Hispanic daughters. So there's this like complicated web here that we have to try to navigate and provide some information and context in, because colorism in the Hispanic community is a really very real thing. And there are a lot of anti-black sentiments in the Hispanic community that we need to work through as well and have conversations around.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the good news. You've got an event coming up, and we want to give you an opportunity to inform people about it.
Right. So we have the Hispanic Center, Lehigh Valley, is hosting its third annual Health Equity Summit. We will be hosting this event virtually. It will be October 27th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., and we'll be focusing on the systemic challenges faced by communities of color in regards to the impact of COVID-19 on communities of color. We are going to discuss colorism within the Hispanic community, And we also have, we're going to be looking at racism in education, systemic racism, which will be, we have invited Dr. Roy and a panel of students to share their experiences as minority students in BASD and provide them with the opportunity to talk to Dr. Roy in a manner where they never usually would have that access. So we're really excited to bring this event to the community. It's virtual. You can go to our website at hclv.org for registration for the event. And for colorism, we also have a expert, Dr. Griselda Rodriguez-Solomon from City University of New York. She'll be talking about colorism. And then the following months after that, she'll do a deeper dive into colorism in Hispanic communities with a community conversation.
That's great news. Delia, thanks for the good work you're doing in this community. I'm sorry you don't work with us anymore. What the heck? You know, so they got you and they're lucky to have you. So
thanks, Alan.
Thanks for joining me on the program.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Lehigh Valley Public Radio, WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. And friends, I just have said this so many times, but, you know, look, I like to stir the pot, and I've done that a little bit tonight, as I always do. But, you know, we are never going to be a great nation when we're as divided as we are. We are never going to be a great nation when we leave so many people behind. We're never going to be a great nation when we ignore the fact that the planet is on fire. We're not going to be a great nation if we don't spend more time thinking about the impact that we have on others. We're never going to be a great nation if we just ignore what we're leaving for our children and grandchildren and the mess that we're leaving. So I hope you'll pay attention this election season. Take a good look at the candidates. Look deep into your soul about what this means to be an American truly for every one of us. Thanks for listening. Again, I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I do want to thank Neil Heaver, who is the main reason why WDIY exists. He's a great guy. I'm happy that he's in this production, making this show better than it would be without him. Thanks so much, Neil. Hopefully we'll see you next time.